welcome to another Simple Politics podcast. It's the week of the Autumn Statement, a week that I found completely confusing, but thankfully I have the brilliant Tatten and Diane here with me to make sure that we can all understand it better. Tatten and Diane, how are you?
Oh, we're up to our neck in autumn statement calculations.
Yes.
Drawing on my GCSE maths.
Oh, shut up.
Your maths is a lot better than that.
You used to do comms for a finance company, right? Then, you're our money expert. Yeah. You're like, oh, no, I can hardly do it. Yeah. You're brilliant at this stuff.
There's a lot of Google involved.
At least you know what to Google.
Jokes,
Yeah.
I've got a friend who whenever I see him, just takes the mic out of SP saying, you just cut and paste from the BBC. Why is that even a job? It's like, we do more than that. Well, sometimes, occasionally we do more than that.
We always do more than that. We never plagiarize.
We always do. We always do more than that.
Yeah, you go for it, Tatten. Go on.
Well, I was just going to say, if you are enjoying this podcast and it's got off to a head of a start, you might like to know that we are recording an extra bonus episode. That's going to go to our Patreon members, to our people. I think the £5 a month tier of Patreon, which is like £1 an episode, if you think about it, or even if you don't think about it, it's roughly that.
And if you don't do the maths,
and then you get an extra every month you get to hear us chatting more, which is, I think, what everyone wants. I'm so bad at selling things. We're going to have a bit of a deep dive into what's going on. We're going to talk about elections, I think. We're going to talk about how we're shaping up. We're going to talk about when the election might be. I saw someone on telly say April. I think that he was like an MP, but I think he was just trying to be contrary. Anyway, I'm not going to say anything more about it now, because otherwise I'll have nothing to say in the extra podcast, and the extra podcast just me go, I've said everything, and that no one wants that. So sign up for the Patreon and you get a deep election cut on Monday.
Yes. So Patreon backers, you can look forward to that or dread it, well, either way, you know. But it will be with you on Monday. So let's get on with the podcast. So it's time to look at the top posts of this week. So, Tatten, what has been our third most popular post of the week?
The third most popular post of the week was about International Men's Day. I didn't realise it was coming, and then it was on Sunday, and I saw a thing about it online, and I just wanted to write about International Men's Day because it's not as famous or as big as International Women's Day, and I think there's very good reasons for that. But it is important to highlight the difficulties that there are for men. Suicide is the biggest cause of death for men under 45. The expectations of machismo are real. I use the term toxic masculinity in the letter because it's something that I feel quite strongly, the expectation. I'm not a macho guy, but I certainly feel that. In fact, I'm very open about my mental health issues. Mm-hmm. I've been in something of a depression hole since September. It's been pretty bad. I cry a lot. And these are things that are seen as not very manly. Like I spoke to, I don't know how personal, I spoke to a family member about a funeral, and he was telling me that it was really emotional. This is the moment when they were lowering the body into the ground. And he said, it was very emotional. I didn't cry. And then carried on with the story. It's like, what? Why tell? I mean, what? And like, you know, he's a good man. He's a good man, this guy. But he was saying why, you know, and for me, that is toxic masculinity. Now, people on the post were saying that it makes people feel like victims when they shouldn't be victims. They had reasonable, you know, reasonable grounds for not liking the term, and that's okay. And I wrote a comment on it trying to say I use that term because it means something to me, but we can debate whether I'm perpetuating something. We can talk about that. But yeah, just talk. Men don't talk enough, and that's a huge generalization, but it's also self-evidential. So let's talk and let's celebrate. Let's celebrate International Men's Day to understand the issues that men are facing. I didn't expect it to be in the top post this week.
Yeah.
I just came to the office and had a little type away of some thoughts. Yeah, that's in at three.
Brilliant. And so, Diane, what was our second most popular post of the week?
Okay, second most popular post. If you were thinking of grabbing a sleeping bag and camping outside Curry's or PC World, if they still exist, or anywhere tonight.
I've got my thumbs.
Just reevaluate your life plans because, as it turns out, Black Friday deals aren't all they've cracked up to be.
What?
I don't believe you.
Yeah, I know.
So shocked.
I know. But don't take it from me. Take it from the lovely people at Which who did like our post and said thank you for sharing. So that's pretty amazing.
Big fans, though.
I know. Big fans. And we're big fans of their research because they've done it all. They've crunched the numbers and said that actually throughout the year, things are cheaper than they will be today if you're listening on Friday. So don't be fooled. Don't get into that kind of cycle of needing to buy. And actually this week I've watched again. You might have seen it. It's doing the rounds. It's Martin Lewis, money saving expert guy, who does his plea about not buying gifts for the sake of it and falling into that trap of where we need to, and then almost by giving someone something you then force them to have to reciprocate, and it's all this big spiral, and it leaves some people really stressed and in debt over the Christmas season. And it's a good watch if you haven't seen it, because he makes some really good points there.
You love him so much.
I actually
always
do.
Talk about him. You think he's amazing.
I do. He's right. Him and Joe Wicks are my two favourites.
But Joe Wicks does love us. Joe Wicks called us legends.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There you go. That's worth a hit workout. I'll put that in my plan for today. But the last time we spoke about Black Friday a couple of weeks ago, because we did mention it, and we were wondering where the term came from, and I've tried to find out, but it's very vague and very murky. Like, no one's entirely sure. It's just been rebadged as this big commercial thing. But apparently the first time it was used in the 1950s was in factories. They called it Black Friday because so many people phoned in sick the Friday after Thanksgiving in the US. But now it's just turned into a spend-a-thon, which is
At this point, I need to talk about SP stuff, because we absolutely need to sell things. Like, I mean, we're talking about the Patreon, because we need to keep this podcast up and running. We need to be able to justify all the three of our time. But selling through our shop is incredibly important in keeping SP afloat. It's a large part of our funding. And we're not doing a Black Friday. Well, we are doing a Black Friday deal today because other people are murky and not very transparent, whereas we believe in honesty. So we are putting our prices up today. Everything costs £2 more. Black Friday special. If you don't fancy that, if you want a deal to get it at the original price, which is what the other people do, then you can use the token, the coupon, only a tenner. Stick only a tenner in on the bit where you stick the thing in, and your things will only cost a tenner.
I did laugh when you said, "Oh, we're going to put prices up." I was like, "Oh, are we?" But you know, we're not like everyone else, are we? So
we are not. You, Diane, are not like everybody else.
We're just so funny, you know. When everyone else zigs, we zag.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Look at us go.
Yeah.
So yeah, spstuff.co.uk if you want to get some good stuff.
Or if you're not listening on Friday, it'll be back to normal prices. But you can always leave us a tip. So that's, you know, you can basically pay what you want, as long as it's over a tenner.
And if you back us on Patreon for over £10 a month, then you get a 10% discount on everything in the shop. So there we go.
Oh, that's Black Friday.
But it's like Black Friday every day.
Oh, my goodness.
If you're a Patreon backer. I know.
Goodness me. And you get to hear extra us.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, you get so many things. Honestly. Yeah, amazing. Anyway, before this just turns into one
massive ad. Yeah.
Episode. Let's move on to the top post of the week. Tatton.
Well, the top post of the week was the new national living wage. It's gone up. It's gone up to £11.44. I think it was previously announced it was going to be £11. It's got to £11.44. It's like £1.20 an hour extra. So if you work, you know, 30 hours a week, that's like an extra £35 in your bank account at the end. Like, now, this may be, I don't know the economics here, but it may be just keeping keeping it at the same purchasing power. And we've certainly got today the energy price cap's gone up by £90. I mean, it's always this average family, which doesn't exist, of £90. So whatever. So there are more bills to pay. So it might not feel all that much more. But when this comes in the spring, 1 month, you will have £30 a week, let's say, more than you did the month before. And if that means you can go around the supermarket and spend an extra tenner in the supermarket, that's great. I think that's great. And it will apply now from 21. Previously, if you're 21 or 22, you had a slightly lower rate. I mean, the idea of that is that businesses will take people on. People will hire young people more if they're a bit cheaper. But I think 21 and 22 was quite a punchy age.
Yeah.
I mean, you can certainly have a family to look after at that point. You can certainly, you know, all kinds of different things. So I think that's a good move to move it down. It's nice it's going up. It's not quite where the actual living wage. There's a campaign group called something like that. And it's not where they would have it. And some companies sign up to the...
Real
living wage. There we go. Some companies sign up for that and pay their people more, which is, you know... And that the real living wage includes London waiting, which is really important, because the national living wage doesn't. And your living wage money, your minimum wage money... doesn't go as far in London as it does outside London. And I know the other cities, Birmingham, Manchester, you know, they are also more expensive, but London is the most expensive. Yeah.
London's on another level.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's nice. The issue with it is that small businesses are struggling to make ends meet. And now they have to pay their staff extra.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's difficult.
Yeah, that's really difficult. And I think a few small businesses even were in our comments to that effect. I mean, maybe we'll get on to budget in a bit, but maybe there is some relief for businesses. So hospitality, retail, those kind of businesses that would have potentially a lot of younger people working for them will have their business rate relief that's keeping on for another year. So that's maybe a good thing. But it's all like giving and taking away,
beauty,
isn't it?
Like beauty parlours. Is that the term? Like, and hairdressers.
Salons.
We call them salons. Salons.
Yes.
That sounds like an odd word. But like... There's a lot of young people on minimum wage working in those places.
Yeah.
And those places are working on profit margins that are paper thin. And these are places that are really important to our high streets. Because service industry, you can't buy it online in the same way. So I just, it's worth raising because obviously people being paid more is good.
Yeah, but it's got to come from somewhere.
It does cause problems. Yeah. It's got to come from somewhere. It's also quite expensive for the government because the government employ a lot of people on minimum wage, the TAs and healthcare assistants, and like the backbone of most of our public services comes from, I mean, the care industry, like the backbone of so many of our public services are on that wage. So that's going to be a big bill for the government.
Right. Well, let's move on to the second section of the episode. This is the mailbag. So this is your opportunity to ask us any questions. And this week, to start off, we had some very similar questions from Nick and Aidan.
Do you think they're friends?
No.
Maybe they are.
No. Well, I'm saying no.
I mean, how do you know? I imagine Nick and Aidan hanging out.
And compared notes and then just both wrote
it. What are we going to ask? Yeah. Well, let's come up with a question. And they workshopped it together and then they both kind of got in touch and they've really, to be honest, Nick and Aidan, your workshopping and collaboration hasn't worked very well at all. So I think you need to have a long, hard think about your friendship.
Anyway, what is asked, how do you not feel rubbish when there seems to be no light in politics at the moment? And the other asks, when so many terrible things are happening, how do you cope? Discuss.
Whoa.
I think we cope together.
Yeah, big question. And it's true, but it's not the first time we've probably been asked that because we went through the whole COVID thing, didn't we? Simple politics. So and people asked it a lot then, you know, like, how can you write about this stuff and how can you, and the news is scary and distressing.
That's so
and
grim.
Yeah.
So grim.
Yeah, grim. But yeah, you're right. We do get through it together and just, yeah.
We have a, like, we use a thing called Slack, like a direct messaging thing. It could be like WhatsApp, could be anything, but we use Slack and we just chat all day. And that really helps. Like we've hardly ever met up, but we've been a team for a long time now. And we help each other get through it. And it is, you know, it's massively bleak and it's sad and terrifying. And when you're reporting on the misery of real people, it's hard. But we also try and keep it light as much as we can. We do a lot of laughing. But yeah, I mean, it's tough, but we get through together.
And the less wholesome answer is chocolate, alcohol, screaming into the void.
Absolutely.
like a combination. Yeah.
Yeah.
what I talk about a lot is love, talking, and medicine are the three things that I prescribe when people say they're tough. And the word medicine can mean a lot of things. Like it can mean chocolate. It can mean a stiff gin. It can mean the handfuls of prescription drugs that I have to take every night. You know.
Watching an episode of your favourite TV show. Anything that... Mine are very food-based.
Doctor Who. Doctor Who's back this weekend.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's I'm good. Super excited for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And
is the next question a really light one?
No. Afraid not. I'm gonna ask these two together as well, because they're on the same topic, so we can discuss them together. So Nussie asks, my question for this week's podcast is, why does it seem so hard to agree for a complete ceasefire as well as end the apartheid occupation from Israel? Don't all humans have the same rights and to live with dignity? And Rebecca asks, why did so many MPs not vote for a ceasefire?
Okay, I'm going to take this one to start with. And then Diane, I'm sure you'll want to chip in. The reason that people didn't vote for a ceasefire, and so... I said I'm going to take this and now I'm stumbling around trying to work out where to start on it. Apartheid occupation from Israel that Nussie refers to has been because, well, I mean, the human rights, like the UN say it's rubbish and needs to stop now. And everyone agrees with that. Everyone agrees we need a two-state solution, a real, genuine two-state solution. But we need to get there. And on October the 7th, the things that Hamas did in Israel were, without shadow of a doubt, horrific. And it was an attack on Israel. And they have said they want to do it again. So Israel needs to, this is how the argument goes, they need to defend themselves. They need to get rid of Hamas so that that threat of October, a repeat of October the 7th, can be removed. If we have a ceasefire right now, Hamas stay in place. And Israel cannot stop until Hamas are defeated. Which is why so many people are calling for a pause. Stop fighting now. Let's get the aid in. Let's get the injured out. Let's do this. Let's do that. And then you can carry on in your battle to defeat Hamas. Now, that's a rubbish compromise because, yes, people in Gaza will die. And Israel say this is a war. There hasn't been a war in history where civilians haven't died. This is not on us. This is on Hamas. Hamas chose this war, not us. We are simply defending ourselves. So that's why lots of MPs aren't calling for a ceasefire. That's why, I mean, so Nessie also ends her question, their question on, don't all humans have the same rights and to live with dignity? And of course they do. Of course they do. I mean, the pause argument says that the Israeli people cannot live with that fear of attack where Hamas completely out of nowhere killed and raped and tortured and took hostages and did all of those things. The argument for a ceasefire is really obvious and really easy. People are dying. Let's stop doing that. And then we can talk, and then we can work out a two-state solution from here, do it nicely, you know, have free and fair elections, which they haven't had for a long time. Hamas did win the last election in Palestine, but they were a very different organization. They were talking a very different game back then, and they haven't allowed any elections since then. Hamas are the enemy of the Palestinian people as much as they're the enemy of the Israeli people. So what everybody wants is to have the Palestinians, give the Palestinians free and fair elections, set up the two-state solution, keep them separate, everybody, all humans have the same rights and to live with dignity, as Nessie says. How we get there is very much disagreed upon. Oh, and everyone's condemning Israel the way that Israel are doing it. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's why Israel have stopped and saying they will allow a pause because of public pressure onto it. So American, especially American, but also it's in Qatar they've been negotiating, and pressure has worked on Israel to allow more aid, but they say they will come back and committed to attacking Hamas. That's a long answer from me. Is there anything you'd like to add?
No, I think that's really well explained in terms of the positions of both sides of the arguments, and of course it goes without saying that Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer support the position of a pause at the moment for those reasons. And just everyone just hopes for peace and some kind of solution. It's what everyone wants.
Everyone.
I think it might be important to add that the pause solution that, not solution, but that Starmer and Sunak are calling for is a step on the way to a ceasefire. They want a ceasefire ultimately.
Yep.
It's what they can do now. I think that's something that a lot of people misunderstand. They think that they don't want a ceasefire. They do. It's just they see the humanitarian pauses as a step in that right direction. It's not they don't want a ceasefire altogether.
Yeah, I mean, you do what you can do immediately, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's just something that's been misunderstood generally.
I think it just, I mean, on that, if the, because Rebecca wants to know about MPs not voting for a ceasefire.
Yeah.
If the House of Commons had voted for a ceasefire, the Israeli would just wouldn't listen to, like, there'd be no, we would lose our seat at the table because Israel would not listen to us.
Yeah.
Now, that's not necessarily a reason not to take a principled stand. Because you could certainly argue that we stand for what's right, whatever happens. But that's another reason why they didn't.
Yeah, and this is why diplomacy is notoriously tricky. So let's move on to the third section of the podcast, which this week is Chancellor Watch. So we're recording this on Thursday. It's a day after the Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, delivered his autumn statement. So what happened, guys? Explain it to us.
I'm gonna do the headlines. Yeah. And then Diane, I think you should do the figures because it's a bit mathsy for
she
me.
She knows what she's talking about.
Yes, that's exactly it. But on the politics of it, we have managed to find a little bit of fiscal headroom because inflation is down and the country is not doing as badly as was predicted. And when you've got a few billion spare, it's a political choice. Do you spend a few billion more on schools, on the NHS? Mm-hmm. Do you spend a few billion more on giving people tax cuts, which means that everybody's got a little bit more money in their pocket and they choose how to spend it rather than the government choosing how to spend it? Do you spend it on foreign aid? Do you spend... So it's almost more of a headache having a bit of extra cash because what are you going to do with it? And Jeremy Hunt's kind of cutting taxes kind of with it. He's certainly choosing to not spend it on public services.
He's
choosing to do it in taxes. And at this point, I'm going to hand over to Diane.
Okay. So, I mean, if we look at the things he announced yesterday, the biggest one probably, it wasn't a rabbit out of a hat, was it? It wasn't like, woo, you know, no one was popping champagne corks when we watched this. But he did.
Although there is a freeze on alcohol duty till August. Well, so
there we go. But he said he would not just buy 1%. He did do a little bit of stagery, didn't he? Not just buy 1%, but by 2%. I'm going to cut national insurance, the main bit, from 12% to 10%. And I think the big thing on this is he said it won't be from April, which is usual. I'm bringing it to January. So I want you to feel the benefit in the new year and have this, you know, extra bit. Now, if you read into this, there's lots of different things. Yes, it is an NI cut. And yes, that's really, people should be saying, yeah, that's great. Any tax cut is a tax cut. Yep, sure. But there are lots of things at play here. There are things like income tax bans have been frozen for ages, and with inflation, that's created a drag. And there are lots of things that means it won't feel like a big windfall, this, will it? Especially now we've had the Ofgem announcement as well. But it's something. NI for self-employed people, that class 2 bit is scrapped as well. That's quite big news if you've ever done a self-assessment and had to do that. National living wage, we've talked about. That was another big one. And he pre-announced that the night before. So that kind of had all its splash the night before. And then benefits. Now, this one we probably should spend a little bit of time on. So in general, benefits, so UC and other benefits, any working benefits basically, will rise in April by 6.7%. But he also talked quite in detail about how he was going to get people who were long-term unemployed for health reasons back into work. And his view is that after 18 months of really intensive support, if you still haven't been able to find a job at that point, you should do some work placements or lose your benefits. So you should keep yourself getting experience, getting your CV up to date, being familiar with working, whether that's working from home or actually going physically out to an office. But keep yourself up to date with practices and work and, you know, keep yourself current with all that stuff, or risk losing your benefits potentially. And that's created quite a stir. I think that was probably the, out of the things we posted from the statement yesterday, that's probably the one that people had most to say on.
And this is where I come back in, because we're talking politics here. Yeah. This is pure conservatism, right? If you absolutely cannot work, of course we will look after you. If we are going to, you know, we're raising benefits the traditional way rather than kind of changing it a bit and raising them less, we will look after you and give you a basic living if you cannot work. But my God, if you can, you bloody better, because we're not spending taxpayers' money in looking after you if you can look after yourself. And that's always been the conservative way. Get on your bicycle and look for a job was a conservative chance. I forget. Like,
that was an actual catchphrase. Was it?
That was his slogan. What he said. Yeah.
Wow.
I think he said it in a budget or maybe a conference speech or something like that. Get on your bicycle and look for a job. That this is what conservatives want. Mm. They want the smallest possible welfare state. And the way to do that is by moving people onto work. And yesterday he talked specifically about if you can work from home, then let's get your job working from home. If you can't leave the house, let's get your job working from home. You can still work. And that's a new thing. Because in the past, if you've been housebound for whatever disability or whatever reason, the doctors signed you off as being housebound, it's been assumed that you can't work. Whereas now, and this is a small difference because it needs companies who say you can work from home. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, we're talking about a lot of minimum wage jobs is where the job center places you. And there aren't many minimum wage jobs that can be done from home. So I think it's going to be quite tricky to find suitable roles for many people, but it's just... Yeah. It's ideology, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just saying you should be doing this, and we'll see how it plays out. I'm not quite sure what happens if you are given the okay to work from home, and there's no jobs to work from home.
That's interesting.
I mean, presumably, would you have to work placement from home after 18 months?
Mm.
I don't know what work placement from home. There might be. So I think it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, 18 months, let's not forget, almost certainly this government won't be in place in 18 months. So 18 months from now, if we start to see work placements being needed for people who need to stay at home, people who are housebound, then we'll see what the next government presumably will do about it.
Absolutely. Interesting, you talk about the conservative ideology coming through his statement, and I don't want to go into this too much because I know we'll probably talk about this on our extra pod as well, but the other big thing that conservatives are really keen on is entrepreneurism, I can't even say it, but, you know, and people going out themselves, like you said, and starting businesses and trying stuff. And there was quite a lot. It wasn't anything we focused on for our SP post, but if you're interested, do have a look back, because there's quite a large section about helping people who want to get involved in research and development and future technologies, and quite a bit around being less harsh on people who make a loss. You know, you might try different businesses and some of them might fail and some of them might be successful. And they're very keen on that kind of try it, go for it, do it, you know. And that came across quite a lot in the second half of his statement.
Yeah. I mean, when I had my breakdown and couldn't go to work anymore, I set up SP.
Mm.
And I was fortunate enough to be in a position where I could do that without having to apply for benefits or whatever. I was very, very lucky. I know that most people aren't that lucky.
Well, if the Chancellor wants a poster boy for a success story of trying something out...
And,
here we go.
I mean, a good business doesn't rely on begging people to buy your stuff at Christmas time.
Yeah, okay, fair. But all right. Right, let's move on to the final section. It is time for the crystal balls. So what is going to be happening in the next week, Tatton?
It's all about the COVID inquiry next week. We've had the civil servants. We've had the scientists. In the next 2 weeks, it's the MP's turn. It's the people who are in charge of the country making the decisions. We've heard how toxic the environment was there. We've heard how the science wasn't quite followed all the time, and how toxic everything was. JVT was yesterday talking about, Jonathan Van Tam was talking about having to have police protection. Chris Whitty had police protection, you know, and that we've seen backstabbing. We've seen all the furious WhatsApps. Matt Hancock's being referred to as just a liar. He just lied all the time. Johnson was useless, according to various people. The next 2 weeks, the ministers, the former ministers are up. We will hear from Matt Hancock. We will hear from Boris Johnson. We will hear from Rishi Sunak. We're going to hear from all the big, big players. And it is going to be unmissable. We're recording this on Thursday, and I'm expecting a timetable to come out today on Friday. So if you Google the COVID inquiry, it'll come up. I can't tell you who's coming up when right now, but it's going to be incredible to watch and to see them held to account for the decisions and the processes and the culture that happened during that period.
Yeah. Big things to watch. I don't know what I was saying there then.
The other big thing that's happening next week, I forgot. The other big thing that's happening is that we're going to have a bonus episode on Patreon, which is also going to be unmissable.
Oh my God. Forget Taylor Swift. We're dropping a bonus episode. Wow.
Charlotte's version.
Well, Tatton did his own that wasn't in our notes. So
You do what we're supposed to say.
He went his own way, so not quite as interesting. To be fair, his wall's better. But, you know, the next few days, we'll discuss the autumn statement in the Commons. And then the Criminal Justice Bill is in for its second reading on Tuesday. That's up there already. We've posted on this before, but it could be something, you know, it's always interesting when the government's talking crime. So, let's see what's in the full bill when we get to see it.
Awesome. So another big week next week, and we will be back next week to cover it all for you. But that's it for this week. Thank you, Tatton and Diane.
Thanks, Charlotte.
Thank you.
And
bye.
You just heard a Stripped Media production. Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.